We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Spring is in the air at Littleton Coin Company, and we want to help you brighten your collection. Visit us at littletoncoin.com all month long to enjoy 15% off your purchase. With a wide selection of coins, paper money, supplies, and more, Littleton Coin Company has something for every collector's taste. Use promo code SPRING at littletoncoin.com for 15% off your purchase all month long. Restrictions apply. Littleton Coin Company, serving collectors since 1945.
Welcome into this edition of Floyd Street's Finest. He is Jeff Greer. I'm Jack Grossman. Thanks so much for tuning in. Part of the Field of 68 Podcast Network. Like, subscribe, do all those things I usually forget to say that you should do here on Floyd Street's Finest. YouTube, Spotify, Twitter, Apple Podcasts, however the heck you get to listen to us ramble along here on the show every week. Jeff, always, always, always enjoy having you on, my man. How you been lately?
I'm great. I'm sorry for my, I know it's a little blurred behind us, but anyone who's watching on the streamed version, I'm sorry. I'm in a hotel room, so it's not the most luxurious backdrop for my return to the show, but doing great. Getting ready for soccer season, but definitely still locked in on college hoops. And I got to just say real quick, I know that there's going to get some eye rolls on a Louisville-centric podcast, but how about those Pitt Panthers
getting
hot at the right time? You know, I was making fun of my friend the other day. Their only non-conference, their worst non-conference loss is Missouri. And that might be might keep them out of the tournament. They don't have any non-conference wins, and they've got one or two quad three losses that are not great, but the Mizzou one is killing me because they're starting to make up for it in league play. But anyway, excited to talk about Louisville.
Yeah, that might be the equivalent of last year Clemson missing the tournament when they lost that game to Louisville, or like Miami or like Miami maybe this year losing to Louisville. Just quad four losses don't help you get into the tournament. Doesn't matter if it's a power conference team or not power conference team. Missouri's 0-11 in SEC play, which they lost to Vanderbilt.
And they didn't
even need a traveling violation to get missed on a buzzer beater to lose to Vanderbilt like Texas A&M had a couple nights ago. But Louisville does play Pitt this weekend up in Pittsburgh, so we can get into that a little bit later if we want to. But a rematch there from the first game down in the Yum Center. But the Cards playing better basketball, I think, is a good word to say. I don't know if I would call it good basketball, but you take this four-game stretch where they beat Florida State, which I broke down very thoroughly in the last podcast, then you have the game against Syracuse where you're down to the wire. I have thoughts on that. We probably won't get too deep into that. We can if we want to, but at this point it was already, you know, over a week ago, so I don't know how much meat is left on the bone there. But then you beat Georgia Tech at home, and then you face Boston College. And for me, the big thing's been this: Louisville's offense has kind of carried them throughout the last month, 6 weeks or so. One thing I do point out is I put this on Twitter. I'd have to run it again and update with the Boston College game, which I can honestly do that here in a minute. But I was interested with how much is I want to focus mainly on the defense, and but offensively, Louisville, they've since the Miami game, they've been good. They've made adjustments and they've been effective on that end. I wanted to see how the metrics really reflected that. So, you know, if you go to Bart Torvik, one of my favorite things about that site is you can filter by dates. So if you start with the Miami game and go through the Georgia Tech game, again, I can get this updated again, the Boston College game real quick. Where would you guess Louisville would be rated in offensive efficiency in the country in the last 5 weeks or so?
Probably, I mean, top 50, probably.
118th.
Okay.
Which,
hey, that's bad. That's considering where they have been.
Yes. Again, it's better. Which for me, I find interesting. I forgot
the shooting percentages were not great despite the improvement from the offensive production. So that's way off.
Which to me is really surprising because you know, you just look at the pure point totals. I mean, 101 against Florida State, 92 against Syracuse. They were in the 70s again against Boston College, and they've been consistently scoring in the high 70s, 80s, if not higher, over those last 6 weeks. So kind of what I think is that Louisville's kind of found a style for them. The Georgia Tech game is a little bit different to where it's almost like a gigantic pickup game, I feel like, to where they're just flying up and down the court. They're not playing a lot of defense. They're not exactly playing great defensive teams, whether it be Syracuse or Florida State or Georgia Tech or really any of these teams in the ACC in the back half of the schedule, to where I think it's a little bit inflated, to where I'm not sure how much credit we should be giving them versus what the metrics say, because the point totals and the metrics tell two very different stories about the Louisville offense. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter unless you're doing much of the defensive end anyways. But just what have you seen improvement-wise from Louisville on that end of the floor over the last month or so?
Yeah, well, look, I think it's – you look at individual players and how they've gotten better. And
Tyler Johnson especially.
Yeah, he's a really nice drink-stirring guard. He will look for guys. He tries to create I think, you know, our friend Bob Valvano has a really good point, and obviously he's going to know as well as anyone being around the team and calling all these games of you're still waiting for Johnson, who's a young guard – to learn game management a little bit more and floor management and make decisions and that dictate pace and dictate game management, especially when your team is winning or you're in a tight game. But that kid can play and has gotten a lot better as the season has progressed and he's never lacked for confidence. But I think his productivity has started to match up with that confidence. You know, you look down the roster, you mentioned Huntley Hatfield. I mean, last year he was very uncomfortable. In every game, he just looked like he was uncomfortable, out of sorts, didn't really understand where to be. Now we're seeing him hungry for the ball. He knows how to use his skill set, which is another big part of it. You know, it's difficult. And I remember hearing this when he was leaving Tennessee and transferring, you know, from guys who cover college basketball at a national level, that they had heard, look, there is some frustration there because you just look at the guy physically and you say, seal your man, post up, find ways to get duck ins and score around the basket and be a big guy. And his skill set is a little bit more diverse than that. And his mindset, at least last year, was very much like, no, I'm very much a modern four. I'm a stretch four, put it on the floor type guy. And he's found a happy medium there. So when you talk about individual development with those guys, you know, JJ Trainer before he got hurt, it's unfortunate for him, but he clearly had improved too. And then you talk about Mike James. I mean, Mike James has been, I know he hasn't had every game hasn't been perfect for him. And I know you and I have talked about him at length for years now. He is one of my all-time favorite Louisville players, even though he's been on losing teams. That kid works his butt off. And so you look, we just talked about four guys. And so you start going down the list and, you know, you've got some guys who have really figured out ways forward and ways to look better. And as a result, Louisville's games have been more competitive. But Jack, offensively is what I was going to point to from the BC game. You talk about game management, and, you know, I think to a certain point, they saw that lead evaporate, and you get into a little bit of a dogfight on the road, right? And from 50, it got to 54-54. And in that next sequence that buried the game and won it for Boston College, Louisville had four turnovers. They missed a layup and they gave up a bucket on a putback, offensive putback off an offensive rebound. And those are just little things that you talk about game management. You talk about understanding situations that you cannot have empty possessions with turnovers because they're going to cost you games against teams that are even remotely decent. So that's where you're still going to have those hiccups. And I know you mentioned this earlier. I'm not sure that it's really enough in terms of, you know, the coaching stuff and the end of season decisions, but to their credit, they Louisville has looked better. They've been entertaining to watch the last couple of games. And I know for a lot of fans, you heard them full throated last time they were out at the Yum Center. They're loud. And that is something that has been noticeably a little bit different these last couple weeks. And really since ACC play started, where they had some decent results earlier in the year, earlier in the league slate too. So that's just kind of my perception. But again, I hate for every all roads to always lead back to the coaching situation, but so I'll try to leave that out of it for this
part. We're going to get there, but
we'll get there. But the offense has looked a lot better the last couple times out.
I love that you brought up. I smiled when you brought up when it was 54-54 against Boston College, because that was the big point I had out of that game. Was you score 47 points in the first half. You're clicking on all cylinders.
They looked great.
They looked really good in that first half. But then, you know, it's hard to expect to score, you know, 94 points in a game. like that's just a lot to ask for to have to win a basketball game. Yeah. But Louisville gives up a little spurt. They give up wide open threes on back-to-back possessions. You get to 54-all. Kenny Payne calls a timeout to try to set something up. And you get the full first timeout of the second half, media timeout. So you have 3 damn minutes to set something up. That's more time than you would ever need to set up a play. And Louisville instead turns the ball over out of the timeout, gives up a layup, and then, or actually they had a really bad shot out of the timeout where they didn't have any movement. Didn't have any of that spacing, that ball movement, that really has become the hallmark of when they've been good on the offensive end. Take a challenge shot, give up a layup, then they turn it over, media timeout.
Yep.
That, to me, was the entire game right there. Those three possessions. Because at that point, Boston College was at an 8-0 run and what would end up being a 20-1 run. They end up leading by 13, and you never seriously threaten again. That's the type of thing. Like, they've taken steps forward, and they've been a better team this year than they were a year ago. But in that spot, out of a timeout, you got to be decisive, get to something quickly, especially when Louisville plays with tempo like they like to do. And when they're at their best, they play with tempo. I get it's a half-court set, but you got to get into your action quickly, whether that be Tyler attacking off the dribble, setting up a Huntley Hatfield post up, or looking for James or Trey White on the corners to try to create something. You've got to get into that quickly. You have to have a sense of urgency. And Louisville at that moment did not have that sense of urgency. And that's really where the game went off the rails to me. And I know you brought that up too. So I just wanted to piggyback off that. And by the way, I did look it up during that Louisville from the Miami game through today, 117th in offensive efficiency for Torvik in the country. So basically the same. So
yeah,
better, but that's still not the level that Louisville is striving to be for. And by the way, defensively, they are 206th in that time. Just, and you're not going to win games tough, like man. That.
No,
like you beat Florida State in a shootout like that. And I really thought that was a matchup that favored Louisville for a lot of reasons that we don't need to get into again. But then you go and you play Syracuse, a team that does not play any defense unless they're playing North Carolina for whatever reason, which is really bizarre. Yeah,
they're in a little bit of a tailspin too, aren't they?
I mean Carolina's lost 4 out of 5 now after I kind of crowned them as the hottest team in college basketball, which that's
they,
how it works
they were
though,
for
but
a while.
Yeah they were playing great ball, but they've really crashed the last couple weeks or so, which has been stunning really. But you go on the road to Syracuse and you score 92 points, but you give up 94. And so that was kind of to me the apex of it. to where you could tell, like, they really tried to drill home, like, play with effort, intensity, all that stuff on the defensive end into the Georgia Tech game, to where they were better defensively. But to be honest, I thought a lot of it was that Georgia Tech was incredibly stagnant on the offensive end and really didn't try to move the ball. Miles Kelly was just trying to create everything for himself. The dude dropped 35 on you, so he was electric. But when you look at Louisville's 18-2 run in that game, they're down 60-51. I tracked kind of the key stretch in that. You know, Mike James hits a couple free throws. Caleb Glenn, who was a beast in that game, offensive rebound and a bucket. He hits a three to kind of get you going. But then look at Georgia Tech's 4 or 5 possessions during Louisville's 18-2 run. They wipe out a Kelly wide open three with a moving screen. They travel against a double team right under the basket in the paint. George misses a wide open three. Then George airballs a 1-1 after the under four timeout. And then after James finds Trey White on a driving kick to put Louisville up 5, Georgia Tech dribbles with no sense of urgency up the court. They walk the ball up the court, brick a three without any passes. The dude literally just dribbled up the court and pulled from the top of the key. Gets their own rebound off of that three, misses a layup on the putback, gets the ball back again before Trey White blocks it out of bounds. It's like, you look at those 5 possessions. How much is Louisville doing on those possessions? That to be reeks of Georgia Tech self-inflicted wounds and really just doing some pretty dumb stuff, from, you know, airballing a free throw. How often do you see that in a college basketball game?
I love the airball free throws. I think, what game was I? Oh, I was calling a U of L women's game, and they were playing, it might have been Pitt, or it was either Pitt or BC, because those are the last two games I did. But both teams airballed a free throw, and it's enough when one team airballs a free throw, but it's always shocking when you see multiple.
Twice.
But no, I think, you know, Georgia Tech is in an interesting spot also, because they've shown some real
sparks. I mean, I was down here in Atlanta. I was at the games they won against North Carolina and Duke, and they showed real potential there.
Yeah.
But then,
and I do think they'll be, I think in the long term, I think Stoudemire will get them going.
I like what he's doing.
They'll be a fun team. But, you know, look, with Louisville, it's.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Even if in this context, so even if we're going to say, and I don't necessarily disagree, but even if we're going to say, look, you know, Georgetown or the team you're playing, Georgia Tech, some of the help that Louisville got was self-inflicted by their own opponent's ineptitude or bad decision maker, whatever.
But Louisville still played with a lot more energy and effort on the defensive end.
Sure. And Louisville last year did not get those breaks. That ineptitude did not ever help them. And so, you know, look, I still think a coaching change has to be made, but I still think also that you look at that game, you look at the Florida State game, think of all the times that Chris Mack and Rick Pitino had to coach against FSU with much more talented, more cohesive teams that were nationally ranked, and they lost. And I don't care what iteration of FSU we're talking about, whether it's a team that's right now like definitely on the outside looking in, but, you know, 14-8 or whatever their record
12
is.
12-9.
12-9. Decent enough. They've had some good wins. They have some good players on their team. They're underperforming, I think, a little bit. To get a win against them is a solid win in the ACC. Historically, traditionally, that is a solid win. And so, look, I think at some point you look at and you mentioned Caleb Bunn. I feel bad that I did not mention him and Curtis Williams when we were talking about individual development.
Yeah, he's shooting the ball really confidently. Yeah, Curtis
those
Williams
two
is.
Guys, those two guys look like they are players for the future. And so you start talking about, look, they get some breaks against Georgia Tech and they finish that thing off and they win it. They have some learning lessons that they can take away from the BC loss. They beat FSU. They've had some other games where things kind of slipped for them. And it's clear that if you are a smart team, if you are a cohesive team, and you're growing together, you'll learn from those experiences and they'll benefit you. Even if it's not this season, they'll benefit you down the line. And all of a sudden I'm thinking like, look, even if a coaching change is made, and maybe these guys are guys who wouldn't stay at Louisville unless they had the current coaching staff. I honestly have no insight into that whatsoever. But if I'm a coach coming in, I'm starting to say, look, you've probably got a good handful of guys who I would probably want to try to keep around.
Yeah, you definitely have pieces there.
Yeah, and last year I just
wouldn't say that.
You probably wouldn't say that too much. I mean, outside of Mike James and L. Ellis, and you say maybe there's potential there in a J.J. Trainer and those guys.
Say Jalen Weatherstew's having a role for Carolina this year.
Yeah, yeah. So, but now you're looking at a Louisville roster, and I'm thinking like there's probably seven guys on this team, roughly. Someone's gonna be, oh yeah, name them. But I just mean like a half dozen guys. At least on this roster who I think can be worked with. Now you need to bring in where you need to bring in to fill gaps is again, that game management stuff is really important. And that, you know, people, when you talk about game management, you're thinking point guards, you're thinking ball handlers. It doesn't always have to be those roles. It can be guys in a variety of different roles who can help you with leadership and experience. But I just, it's noticeable. That they've gotten better and they've gotten breaks that they previously were not getting. And that's that, I don't know what that says, but it says something. I
think that's the biggest difference in terms of just the pure results from last year to this year. I mean, last year, obviously they had the 3 1-point losses at the start of the year and that kind of just, everything kind of snowballed after that. But I think this season,
it feels like an eternity ago, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. But the step that I think, if you want to say a step's been taken, has been taken, is that they can compete and win most of these games against bad teams. Mm-hmm. And we saw that earlier in the year when they beat, you know, New Mexico State and Bellarmine and Pepperdine and UMBC. And you're seeing now they're in kind of the bad two-thirds of the ACC. Because outside of Carolina, Duke, I guess Virginia, I was ready to buy in on them, and then they lose to your Pitt team at home. Yeah. Other than that, really, I mean, there's that's a huge win for Pitt.
Yeah.
But other than that, there's just not a lot in the league this year to where you look at the rest of the schedule, you're really not playing teams that are incredibly significantly better than some of the non-conference teams you were playing, to where you look at and you say, okay, you can compete and win some of those games, which is kind of what they've been doing, going 2-2 to start that stretch. But at the end of the day, how much does that show where you want to be as a program long term? And is that enough to show that, hey, you should give them a third year because they're competing with 13-10 Boston College? And I mean, congratulations, or like 13-11 Georgia Tech. That's not the standard at Louisville. To where the thing I've always said is, if they did this last year, people would have been ecstatic, and it would have been,
I don't know about ecstatic, but they would have been like, this is encouraging.
They would have been content. Yeah. They would have been encouraged.
They would have been encouraged,
and it would have been okay. There's something you can build on.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go forward 28 first, it just erases all of that. To do that in the second year, it doesn't help you at all. And that doesn't even mention all the off the court, you know, drama with like Caron Davis and all that stuff, or the Or the press conference stuff, or any of the other things. You're saying Ely wants to beat John Calipari by one, but just in terms of the on the court results, it's better, but it's still not good enough. Is kind of where I'm at. To where I don't think, short of doing the Patrick Ewing thing of winning the Big East title to get an NCAA tournament bid, I don't know what the difference is. Like, let's say right now that they're 8-17. They're at Pittsburgh this weekend, Notre Dame at home, the Duke game on the road, they'll lose that. I mean, they have six games left.
But I was just going to throw this out there, Jack. Okay? I'm just looking back at the schedule. You're probably not going to beat Pitt, and you're probably not going to beat Duke on the road, right?
You're definitely not winning Duke on the road.
Pitt looks like, honestly, one of the four or five best teams in the league right now. So it's hard to imagine.
It's
a bad time to be playing Pitt. And honestly, when they played Pitt in Louisville, was a good time to get them, and they never really threatened. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll pose this before you say everything else. Do you think this could be a trap game for Pitt after beating Virginia on the road? They have Wake Forest after Louisville, and you already whipped Louisville in the Yum Center to where you overlooked that a little bit. No, not at all.
I think Pitt knows that it's in desperation mode.
That's fair.
They are another team where you've got some young guys who are starting to kind of click in a little bit more to match some of their older guys. And it seems like they're getting healthy at the right time. It'd be hilarious if they turn around and Louisville beats them by 20. I mean, that would be funny.
If Louisville wins, they're not winning by 20.
Okay. But regardless, I would just say, I think Pitt's in a spot where they know that these games are at this point, I wouldn't say they have to win out, but they can't lose to Louisville. They can't lose those games. They've got to beat a lot of these like you mentioned, Wake Forest. Wake Forest has looked pretty good lately. You've got to beat some of those teams. You got to beat most of those teams, if not all of them. And then you've got to hope that you pick off the UNCs and Dukes. I know they've already beaten Duke, but just for Louisville's purpose, you get past this game on Saturday, you've got Notre Dame at home, and Notre Dame is now playing like a team that can't wait for the season to end. You've got Duke, which again, it's going to be hard to win at Cameron Indoor from anyone.
Yeah.
But you finish with three games at home against teams that, you would think Louisville would feel like they could be competitive with. We saw the Syracuse game, right? Maybe Syracuse finds a way to sneak in to the tournament conversation. It seems unlikely at this point. Virginia Tech has been disappointing this year. And Boston College, we just saw what that game looks like. So Louisville will get, as the Brits would say, another bite at the apple, a chance to play BC again and maybe see if they can get them at home. But look, I mean, those are conceivably competitive games for Louisville. And they lost to Virginia Tech back in December. I'm scrolling back through the schedule.
And that was a game that they really could have.
Yeah, they lost by seven. Yeah. At a play, another place that's hard to play in. That, even again with Louisville's best teams, hard games at Virginia Tech to play in.
Louisville had that long winning streak for like 23 years against Virginia Tech before the MAC era a couple of years ago. Though.
Yes, but playing at Castle is a tough place to play. It's the fans are right on top of you. You're kind of in the middle, you're not in the middle of nowhere, but you're in a far place from really anything else in Roanoke. It's conceivable that Louisville finishes the season
12-19.
Maybe. I picked 10-21 before the season started, I think. I think I had him at 10-21.
I don't even remember what I had him at, but it was probably somewhere in that range. Yeah. I'd have to
there
go.
There were folks who were talking more like 14-16 wins with the schedule, and when they started losing some of the non-conference games that I think people were expecting Louisville to be able to win with the roster. That's really when I think the bottom kind of fell out on any conversation of there being a third year. And now of all times, they're in league play that's supposed to be harder, and they're starting to click a little bit and look a little bit better. And it makes for a very fascinating conversation.
I mean, how much
I don't have to make these decisions.
Yeah. Or actually, I'll say this. If U of L,
unless you want to pay me, Jack.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, $1 million, I'll make those decisions. If you want to give me Josh Hurd's paycheck, I will happily make every decision you ever want me to make.
My wife would love that too. Yeah.
But to me, I just don't see much of a difference between 11 and 20 or 12 and 19 and 9 and 22. Or eight and 23, to where it's like, congratulations, you won a few more games. To me, if you're like 15 and 15, that's one thing. And let's be honest, if they would have won the Chattanooga and Arkansas State games, which they different got blown out in both of those games, maybe it is a little bit of a different conversation. But the fact of the matter is, you got 20 pieced in both of them. and you lost to Kentucky Wesleyan as an exhibition game, which technically doesn't count against your record, but people remember that.
Yeah. Yep.
To where those things matter. And you're not, unless you go in and like reel off somehow six in a row and win in Cameron and win at Pittsburgh, things I don't expect to happen, or win the ACC tournament, another thing I don't expect to happen. I mean, I just don't – I don't see how there's a path to where you can say enough has been done to give him a third year. Yes, it's been a little bit better, but you're still sitting here. We're saying how much better it's been. You're 8-17 and 3-11 in the league. That's not what Louisville basketball is supposed to be.
No,
it's just not. And it's tough because, you know, you never want to just advocate and say, you know, a guy should be fired. But it's one of those things to where it's just not good enough still at this stage, especially after 4-28 the year before.
As you guys know by now, we've partnered with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for the listeners and the viewers of the Field of 68 as we all get ready for the best month of the year, March Madness. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, you can use the bonus code FIELD150 and you will get $150 in free bets on your first wager with BetMGM, regardless of whether or not you win that first bet. Here's the best part. All you need to do is deposit and bet $5 of your hard-earned money. This is how you make it work. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using the bonus code FIELD150. That's FIELD150. Deposit at least $5 and place your first wager on any game. You will receive up to $150 in bonus bets regardless of the outcome of your bet. Just make sure you use that bonus code FIELD150 when you sign up. And remember, BetMGM is now available in one wallet in select states. As a New Jersey resident, this is super convenient when I have to go cover games in Philly or New York, which happens quite a bit. When you cross state borders, you just log into your existing account and fire away. You don't have to create a new account in each state. It's easy, it's simple, and it's clean. And most importantly, we have some fun stuff coming up for the conference tournaments and for the NCAA tournament. Bet insurance tokens, college hoops odds boost, and my personal favorite, a nice little parlay boost here and there. So download the BetMGM app and sign up today. Big news, guys. I am thrilled to announce that we have partnered with Autograph, a company founded by the GOAT himself, Tom Brady. The Autograph fandom app gives you access to the best college hoops content, fan contests, and exclusive rewards like discounted tickets, all for doing the things that diehard fans like you already do, following your favorite team in the news and listening to podcasts just like this one. When Tom, and yes, I am calling him Tom, we're on a first name basis these days, co-founded Autograph, he had one mission in mind: change the fan experience for the better. It works like this. You get all of your college hoops content you want in one place. You get articles from your favorite writers, pods from your favorite hosts, contests from your favorite creators, all on the feeds and the sites that you already enjoy. But instead of having to go to all these different places, it all comes to you in one spot, the Autograph fandom app. But here's the best part. The more content that you consume, the higher you rank in the app. As you consider to level up in status on the app, you can unlock unique rewards curated exclusively for you. So download the free Autograph app in the App Store and use the referral code F68, that's F68, or tap in at the link in the description below, or in the podcast app of your choosing to start earning points for doing something as normal as listening to this very podcast.
Hey, and one other thing that I'll mention about this conversation, Jack, is, and I know we talked about this a couple of years ago, but once you start getting into the, you know, I heard this connection through this booster has been in touch with this connection to this coach, talking figures and jobs and agents are starting to field calls, and you know, your team is mentioned in every single coaching search, coaching carousel and coaching search article. It's hard to put that back in that milk yeah. back in the carton. It is. And, you know, as much as people who are in these situations will say, oh, I'm not paying any attention to that, we're not talking about that, they know about this stuff and people bring it up to them. They know about it. And it's hard. It's really hard to put that back in the bottle. And on top of all of that, and I know I've written extensively about it in my previous life, and I know you and I have talked about it, there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen too. And when you've got a lot of prominent voices who have money or have influence in one way or another, it makes for a very significant echo chamber, and it creates a real challenge to succeed in. You've got to be extremely headstrong and extremely confident in what you're doing to survive in this market and in this job. There's a reason why it's one of the top, you know, depending on who you talk to, 6, 8, or 10 jobs in the country. And there's a reason why the two guys who have been the most successful at it, at least since things got to the stage where there was a lot of cooks in the kitchen and there was money involved and all that stuff, are two of the like most revered coaches for their swagger and their confidence and their coaching ability in college basketball history. And look, you went to IU. It's very similar up there. You've got to be able to withstand, not even withstand that stuff. You've got to be able to just plow through it and thrive at it. And that's another side of this that, you know, I just don't think that Kenny Payne has been able to deal with. Certainly, you know, I think it got to Chris Mack a little bit once things started to go south. I think he thrived in it at first, and then he kind of realized, you know, if you don't get the results, it becomes a pretty difficult place to be. That's a big challenge with this job. And at this point, I think it is too late to really change the trajectory of where this thing is headed.
So if they do make a change, though, I'm sorry to be on the spot, but you know, we have to do it. Who are some guys that you think could fill that void and be able to thrive in that atmosphere that Louisville does have? That, you know, when it's going well, I don't want to view it as just a negative. When it goes well at Louisville, you're supported and the fan base follows you and is as static about you as much as anyone else in college basketball. Mm-hmm. So it's not just a negative. And if you win, none of that stuff matters as long as you're winning. Mm-hmm. The problem is you got to win. and that's easier said than done. So I know Musselman's been the hot name on all the message boards and all that stuff. And he's been thrown around there. You know, the Mick is the pick thing's been going, but I don't know. I don't think they could afford that buyout, but just, who are some guys you would like to see Louisville take a run at, and who do you think Louisville could realistically have a shot of ending up with throughout all the muck of, you know, the agents and the message boards, the Discords, all that stuff?
Well, I was going to say the last time we did this, we pissed off a lot of fan bases.
Namely Arkansas. Will the Arkansas people find us again?
I don't know. That is the question. The bottom line is their guy is always going to have his name thrown into a lot of these big jobs. And, you know, I know we were kind of heading in this direction anyway, so I'll just throw it out as a factor in all of this conversation is the Ohio State opening.
That was the next question. Yes.
Does Michigan open? People keep throwing in Indiana. I love Woodson, so I don't know. We'll see how that goes. But look, I'll say this on Woodson.
Like I don't just very quickly. I would be stunned, and I know you have more inside info and all that stuff than I do, but I would be stunned after the fact that they hadn't made the tournament in 6 years. They make it year one. Last year, they finished second in the Big Ten, runner-up for player of the year in Trace Jackson Davis. They're a four seed, the round of 32. That would take a lot. I know it's been an absolute train wreck this season so far, but it would be quite the move for a program that's been traditionally a lot more patient with their coaches, with Archie Miller and Tom Crean, than like a Louisville has been, for better or for worse, on that standpoint, to where just the outside influences and kind of reading it from that perspective, as someone who, you know, obviously went to school there and follows them very closely, I would be pretty stunned if they moved on Woodson. But
I think our colleague Goodman, Jeff Goodman, has said if anything were to happen there, it would be Woodson deciding that he doesn't want to coach anymore versus the school move. And because I agree with everything there, and I honestly don't think that would be a wise move unless you're confident you can literally go get the pie in the sky candidate.
They would go get Dusty Mays, I think is what they would do. You know, maybe, former night manager. So, that just makes sense.
Right. So, you know, you there's factors there that are always going to be weighed on by ADs and people around the ADs, boosters and all that stuff. So the reason I mention any of those other potential places is just because they're great jobs and there's a lot of resources in those jobs. And there's people who are willing to pay big money for good coaches to go get those jobs. And so as you're trying to jostle for position, it's like those old rebounding drills. And I know teams still do it. You put the bubble on the basket, you can't leave the paint, and you knock the crap out of each other. That's what the coaching carousel is going to be. They're going to knock the crap out of each other, and you got to find someone who's a fit. I think for Louisville, I think you could go two routes with how to fill this job. And I think both of them, from a characteristic standpoint, is where I'm going with this. I think both of these characteristics could work at Louisville. I think you either need to get a guy who is a head down X's and O's guy who is still, you know, good in media and stuff, but really is going to prove folks, hey, the X's and O's in this team they're going to play hard. They're going to be a good, solid team. And that's where like a Dusty May comes into play is he's a guy who's not some big brash, you know, personality. He's not going to blow you away with big statements and press conferences and stuff like that. But he's going to get good players. He's a big evaluator. And I would encourage people who are interested in learning about all these coaches. There's almost always going to be a really good profile of them in The Athletic. But my buddy CJ Moore wrote a really good profile of Dusty May last year before FAU went on that Final Four run that really gave an insight into how he operates and how he thinks and how he's built a team. But then you get into that characteristic of, like we were talking about earlier, the headstrong, doesn't matter what's going on around us. We're going to win. I'm going to be out there. I'm going to be confident in what I'm doing. And there's like 10 guys who I can think of who I think would fit that bill. We mentioned Musselman. I think Jerome Tang probably fits into that category. I think Mick Cronin, when things are going really well, has a swagger about him. But again, as you mentioned, that might be an expensive situation there. I really, truly don't understand how that would all work. And if it's truly as expensive as it's being made out to be. But yeah, you just keep going down that list of guys who, you know, a Nate Oates, for example. I don't think Nate Oates is going to be on the radar for Louisville because again, the price tag is significant, but I use him as an example. He's brash. He's confident. His teams play a very specific style. They're good. They're fun to watch. Bruce Pearl is in that same category. Very specific roster building style. They play a certain style. They're fun to watch. They're good teams. And he's out there and he's confident in his guys and what they're doing. And so I think you could go in either of those directions for a characteristic profile. But I think, you know, to get the juice back a little bit, I kind of lean towards you need to find someone who's got that big personality to come in and be the face of the program again and really be out front. And really be someone who supercharges the program a little bit because I think the fan base needs it.
Yeah, and you look at it, I mean, you said, you know, Nate Oates probably isn't someone that's a viable candidate for Louisville because of the financials. You look at an Ohio State or a Michigan, if that opens, maybe that's a little bit different for Nate Oates for those two, because those two schools can pony up the money that Alabama can't, to where it brings up an interesting situation to where traditionally Louisville's a better job than Michigan, Ohio State. Michigan, Ohio State are good jobs, probably.
Yeah, they're very good jobs.
Yeah, they're very good jobs. Top 15, like, probably. Kind of top 15 jobs. Like, Louisville, probably top 6, 8, 10-ish. Like, it's just kind of one level above Michigan, Ohio State. But I think the great leveling of the field is the financial situations. You know, Michigan, Ohio State have the Big Ten money. They don't have... If, you know, Louisville ends up firing Kenny Payne, that's $47.9 million in buyout money you're paying in the last 8 years. That's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And the ACC contract isn't as big as the Big Ten. Just not even to mention the fact that Michigan and Ohio State are two of the biggest public universities in the country.
Massive athletic department, massive
alumni bases. And yes, they're predominantly football schools. But they're not too happy. I mean, the fact that Ohio State's pulling the trigger on Chris Holtmann on Valentine's Day. Like, they're trying to win in basketball. There, is there? Yeah, no. There really isn't. But but that's showing, like, they're serious about trying to hire a dude to bring them back to relevancy. Two programs that Michigan under John Beilein was a phenomenal program. Mm-hmm. You know, made a couple Final Fours. Obviously had the title game of Louisville in 2013. Ohio State made, you know, the back-to-back Final Fours with Mike Conley and Greg Oden. They hadn't been as consistently up there as Michigan was under Beilein, but still a really traditionally good program. To where, all things equal, even though Louisville's the better job on paper, I'd probably put Louisville behind Ohio State, and if Michigan opens, Michigan in the pecking order. And that's not something we're used to seeing. When the Louisville jobs open, it's usually the biggest job on the market because it's really hard to find another job that would be as good. I do think, and you can just say this is the Indiana guy talking, but I do think Indiana would probably be the top job if it opened up, just because it's very similar traditionally tier-wise to Louisville, but they have closer to the financials that Ohio State and Michigan have, and they're obviously as committed to basketball as Louisville is on that standpoint, to where I think that might push them a little bit ahead of those two, but just pushing them again to the side, Ohio State and Michigan, I think, might be ahead of Louisville at this point if both those jobs were to open.
Yeah, it just depends. Like, if they're both vying for someone with a, you know, an eight-figure buyout, maybe that changes the complexity of the situation. But, you know, for all of the conversation about money stuff, I still think Louisville, if it really came down to it, they can afford who they want to go get. You know, I know that they're paying a lot of money for a lot of different guys. And I still think Josh Hurd probably doesn't get enough credit for negotiating the buyout of Chris Mack's contract down to what he did. Cause he was owed quite a bit more. But I don't know, man. I still think Louisville has the ability to go get somebody. Now, the challenge I think that you're throwing in there also is, you know, you're starting to lose touch with a generation of young basketball players. And that's where I think, you know, that's probably the biggest reason why I would make a coaching change. Is you're talking about kids who are, you know, 16 right now, who are, you know, coming up through the ranks of college basketball. They were five years old when Louisville was one of the best teams in the country. You know, they had the years with Donovan Mitchell in the immediate aftermath of that, and Terry Rozier and those guys. So maybe there's a little bit more in touch, but you're running the risk here of, you know, really not having a team that has had a ton of success in recent years to have that name value. And, you know, the resources are there. The conference needs to get better. The ACC really is in a tough spot right now in the last couple of years. But you've got the resources. You sure as heck got the arena. And the arena is a big selling point when it's full and all that stuff. So I do think that is a big part of this for Louisville. But you've got to go figure out a way to get to strike while the iron's hot and get back into the national picture quickly. So that's kind of why I think you want to go with someone who's got a little bit of that juice and that swagger. It's going to be interesting, Jack, because there's all these names. I don't know if you've read Jeff Borzello's look at the Ohio State job yet, but I think it came out the day before we recorded this. But, you know, you're seeing names like McDermott from Creighton. You're seeing Miller at Xavier.
Yeah. Lamont Paris.
Lamont Paris is going to be a
Ohio native.
Yeah. So there's some interesting names, and I don't know, you know, I don't know how many of those names will overlap with what a Louisville would be looking at. I think Ohio State and Michigan probably would be looking at closer candidate pools. And maybe, you know, there's guys like Jerome Tang that I think are exciting for Louisville fans, but it's such an interesting market because it really feels like the last few years, the big, big, big fish, the Scott Drews, the, you know, these really
Mark huge Few names. For the longest time.
Yeah. These really huge names, Tony Bennett, like it just doesn't seem like those guys are going anywhere. In which case, you know, what's the next tier down from that? And it just isn't the same list that it used to be. There was a run, and you mentioned Archie Miller. But there was that run where it was Archie Miller, it was Chris Mack,
Travis Smart.
Yeah, Shaka Smart. Chris Holtman was in that group.
Sean Miller,
all these young coaches. Yeah. And so you had all these young up and coming coaches who now have finalized where they're going or have found places that they are or have failed and gone back to a lower level of a job. And it's just created a really interesting market. So I'm fascinated to see what Louisville thinks they can swing at and see where that goes from those initial swings.
There's one name that we haven't mentioned yet that I know has been incredibly divisive amongst fans. And I'll go and give my thoughts on it for you, Jeff. But the whole Chris Beard thought, you know, very big personality, has won a lot of games at, you know, some very hard places to win in Texas Tech. And this year has already, you know, made Ole Miss at least a competent team. And obviously was at Texas before, you know, everything happened. But kind of the big question of would Louisville hire a guy like that, you know, trying to balance the moral compass of he's going to win games, but has checkered past where it's a little bit different than, you know, Bruce Pearl taking a Tennessee kid to a barbecue or Will Wade making Javonte Smart a strong ass offer. And I've been very like Johnny Two Sides on it. Cause I'm like, again, if you want me to make the decision, give me Josh Hurd's paycheck and I'll tell you what decision I would go with. But do you think Louisville would go for a guy like a Chris Beard that has done so much winning and has the big personality that would fit the Louisville job well, but has the allegations of, you know, the things that got him fired from the Texas job and has him at Ole Miss now? Do you think Louisville would take a view of we can't hire this guy because of that? Or would they say short-term bad PR would be outweighed by the potential of him potentially winning a lot of games and going deep in the NCAA tournament?
I am only speaking for myself on this.
Fair.
I have not had a conversation with Josh Hurd in a while, not for any negative reason. I just haven't talked to him in a while. Something that I think is a factor in all of this that people need to consider is that a coaching hire is not done in a vacuum, and it is certainly not done just by an AD. You know, Tom Jurich, as an example, the guy was a unicorn. There are not very many ADs who essentially ran a university to the level that he did and was able to make hires that otherwise most ADs probably would not have been able to make. And so we'll save that conversation, whether that's a good or a bad thing, for a whole other day. I know he is revered by a lot of Louisville fans. But Josh Hurd is not making this hire just by Josh Hurd. He's got to answer to some university folks and some larger institutional side things. So it's my perception Somehow my TV in my hotel room just turned on. I'm sorry about that. But it's I'm not even sitting near the remote. I don't even know how that happened. Sorry, that's bizarre. I'm going to turn it off as soon as I give you my thought on this. But look, personally, if I'm an athletics director, I can't hire Chris Beard. I just can't, especially if I'm the AD at Louisville. I think Louisville has, for better or worse, dealt with some real stuff. Some of it not its own doing. I mean, you're not going to blame Louisville for Dino Gaudio and his behavior, but I can't make that hire. I can't make that hire. That's not to say, you know, I know there's all these back and forths and people have disputed allegations and blah, blah. You can't make that hire. You just can't if you're Louisville. So I just, for me, it's not even a discussion. I just don't, it's not a possibility.
That's fair. I just think it's impossible to do this coaching search with the amount
with it's the been. Remote. Keep talking. I'll but come back.
It's so perfect that this happens while we're talking about freaking Chris Beard of all things.
It's an all-time podcast moment.
I mean, we're talking about Chris Beard and serious allegations stuff, and that's when the TV remote pops on. It's incredible. It's you can't script that. But yeah. To me, I feel like there's just been so much talk about it that we can't talk about the coaching search and not bring it up. Like for me, it's a moral dilemma. It's an absolute moral dilemma because for right or for wrong, and I would honestly say usually for wrong, a lot of times in sports, and I'm not just U of L, but anything, whether it be the NFL, you know, Major League Baseball, basketball, any sport you want to look at, we very much push the morals aside if the player is good enough or if the coach is good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's good or bad for us as a society. I just think it's a fact at this point. So mm-hmm. I don't know if Louisville would do the same thing. Obviously, it's a very unique situation, as with all the scandals and stuff that you mentioned. But the question to me is, would Louisville be – I think the correct word is desperate. Desperate enough to do that if they feel like he's the best guy and he's the dude that they could get if they weren't able to get someone like Musselman or Tang or Dusty May, so on and so forth. I think it is just – worth saying and mentioning and needing to bring up, because I think, you know, it's whether you want it to happen or not, it's a part of this coaching search at this point until we
look. I don't think yes, I agree with all that, and I don't think that the bona fides, the coaching bona fides, and there are significant coaching bona fides with Chris Beard, he's a good basketball coach, I don't think that there is enough of a separation between him and some of the other people we've talked about who are all at different stages in their career to say this guy, aside, if you cast aside a pretty big thing to cast aside, is a slam dunk resume compared to everyone else.
Similar resume to, yes. I mean, like Chris Beard's been to a national title game in an Elite Eight. Eric Musselman's been to two Elite Eights in a Sweet 16. Jerome Tang in 1 year's been to an Elite Eight. Nate Oates has been a number one overall seed, been to multiple Sweet 16s. Mick Cronin's been to a Final Four. And other than this year, has had 2 decades of being a damn good head coach of winning a lot of ball games and getting to the NCAA tournament.
Dusty May, I still like, I don't know if Dusty May is the right fit for Louisville. I don't know Dusty May. I've never talked to him. I've read one story about him, and I've watched FAU play quite a bit in the tournament and towards the end of last year and into this year when they were really, really good. But Dusty May, I lived in South Florida for 3 years. I lived in West Palm. I lived in Palm Beach County, where FAU is, for 3 years.
What happened to the tan?
I never had one to start with, my man. It's white as a hotel wall then. And
I'm still I'm right there with you.
Yeah, it's not great. I cannot tend. But anyone taking Florida Atlantic to a Final Four has something going right for them. And the fact is look, you know, I know people, this has been disappointing this year, and they were preseason top 10. They're still like 18-5, which I think it's like, guys, let's check ourselves here. We're talking about FAU. Now, they've invested in their university the last decade. They've spent some money. They've had a lot of change and growth there. But that is a tough place to win. And Dusty May took them to the Final Four. Jerome Tang is in the toughest conference, I think, during the regular season to win in. And they had a great first year. Now he's, you know, it's been a little bit more challenging in the second year.
Squarely on the bubble this year.
Squarely on the bubble, but they play their butts off in that league. And so, you know, you start to look at these younger guys, and I mean younger in their coaching careers. They're not necessarily younger by age. And you have to look at the context in which their teams are succeeding. And that just makes it a very interesting conversation. And Jack, I want to throw one more thing at you, because I'm interested for your thoughts on it. We're talking about all these guys, and a lot of them are not having great seasons. There isn't this team's going to be a one seed like Chris Mack. It's going to be a one seed. And then at the end of the year, he's leaving on a high and you're getting the hot coach. You mentioned Mick Cronin. They're what, like 13-12? They've really clicked on the last couple weeks, and they've really started to win some games. But Musselman is struggling at Arkansas. You talk about Tang is a bubble team this year with Kansas State. Dusty May's team has, again, they had preseason top 10 expectations put on them. They're still very much going to be a tournament team and probably a higher seed, but not to the level that they were last year. And so you just keep going down the list of these guys who are good candidates, who just are not having these huge years, which is why even a Sean Miller is not having a great year.
They're not an NCAA tournament team this year.
Is why, you know, McDermott at Creighton might be an intriguing guy. But yeah, you just keep going down the list and these guys aren't having huge years. And so I think that makes for a really interesting conversation around making a hire. You're just not going to be able to roll the Final Four clips and the conference championship clips of this guy that you hire in all likelihood, unless there's a rabbit in the hat that Josh Hurd knows about that we don't. And I think that adds an interesting layer to all of this too.
Yeah, a few things on that. Number one, I think you've seen that before, to where, you know, Shaka Smart makes the Final Four in 2011, but he doesn't leave to take the Texas job until, what, 2017? Mm-hmm. I mean, you've seen, you know, Chris Beard goes to the national title game. The next year, he's like a sixth seed, and then he goes to the Texas job. To where I think you've seen athletic directors take a much more larger view of things mm-hmm. when it comes to the coach, whereas the fan and media side, it's very much, well, let's look at what you've done lately and ignore the bigger picture of a lot of things. Like Eric Musselman's been a disaster this year, but again, the previous 3 years he'd gone Sweet 16, Elite Eight, like which year's the outlier there? This one, you know, Mick Cronin has had 20 years where he's been the NCAA tournament every year, has made a Final Four. Was it kind of a miraculous miracle run? Yes, but he's been in the second weekend before, he's in the NCAA tournament mm-hmm. every year, and at I don't think Mick Cronin's the guy Louisville's going to hire, but if they were to go that route, he would at least give you a very solid baseline of you're going to be an NCAA tournament team more often than not, which would be very refreshing for Louisville at this stage. And you can keep going on and on down the line. Jerome Tang's a little bit different. He's only been a head coach for 2 years, but a lot of these dudes, it's you take the larger sample size and not just, and even with Louisville, you take the larger sample size of 2 years of Kenny Payne and not just what's happened the last four games. It tells a much, much different story than just the what's happened in the last couple weeks theory. Mm. Number two, I think it's a very good thing for Louisville, to be honest, to not just have the shoe-in one-off dude that's going to kind of be the head coach, because they've had that the last two times of Kenny Payne and Chris Mack, and we've seen how that's turned out.
Yeah.
I think it's very refreshing. I mean, even on the football side, it's been Jeff Rom both times.
Yeah.
And they only got him once. I think it'll be a nice change of pace and very refreshing for Louisville to actually go through an actual coaching search mm-hmm. and be able to look at a lot of different candidates and let Josh Hurd and the search firm that everyone will eventually end up hating. It's just inevitable. It's going to happen because it always happens.
Gotta have the search firm. Sorry,
yeah,
guys.
Gotta have a search. Yeah, but
Somebody's got to do the vetting for you.
Yeah, but the search firm, Josh Hurd, the board of trustees, whoever else gets involved, they get to actually go through candidates and do actual interviews, give lots of people chances and be able to have their own opinion formed instead of just being handcuffed by the fan base to and former players to hire Kenny Payne or, you know, Christy Max from Louisville. You got to hire him. But
yeah.
But I think it'll be a nice change of pace for Louisville to be able to actually go and get the guy that the department wants to hire. Not saying they didn't want to hire Kenny Payne or Chris Mack, but something that isn't a foregone, set in stone conclusion and just becomes a formality that we've been talking about for the last 3 months.
I agree. I'm worried I'm going to ruffle some feathers here, but another guy who I think is a really good coach, and I agree with everything you're saying, is Steve Forbes at Wake Forest. I think personality-wise, I think he'd be fun at Louisville.
I like watching Steve Forbes' teams. They're really fun to watch play, but at some point you gotta do more than a first four.
I agree.
They're good and fun this year, but they're probably an NIT team. They had Aladdin Williams, won the ACC Player of the Year. They were an NIT team.
Yeah.
Were they first four last year? I mean, that would be my biggest thing in Steve Forbes. I know our mutual friend Mark Ennis is very high on him also. And he passes the eye test, but he doesn't have the results.
You got to have some results. No, that's true. That's true. So, I mean, it's fascinating. It's a fascinating search. I'm intrigued. I'm so happy that people still think it's fun to tell me when some booster I've never heard of has tracked down an intermediary to talk to another intermediary who's connected to Coach X. I love that stuff. So if you're listening to this, please keep doing that because it's very entertaining for me. And I enjoy it. And I have no strings attached now except for the occasional Jack Grossman podcast appearance. I'm just along for the ride. I live in Louisville, so I'm intrigued by the coaching search. And I tell people this every year. I think they think I'm crazy. I don't get me wrong. I love the tournament. I'm obsessed with the tournament, like all of us are who would be listening to this podcast. Watch every game as much as I can, or every time slot, I guess, at this point. But man, I get jacked up for a coaching carousel. I get football and basketball. Just give me that. I like it in the NFL. The NBA isn't as exciting because it's like, who really cares who the coaches are? But college football, college basketball, and NFL coaching carousel. I want all the juice. I want to send me the screenshots of the message boards. Send it all to me. I'm still invested. I'm still fascinated by it. No longer getting coffee in discreet locations with agents, but that's a former life decision. Or sometimes it's not even remotely discreet, and somehow nobody really noticed. But
next time we're getting into these stories, because we gotta hear more.
Those are private Zoom conversations with Jack Grossman, not Floyd Street's finest conversations.
Yeah. I will say this though. Hopefully, this is the last time we gotta go through this on the Louisville end, because not gonna lie, you know, the coaching search stuff is fun, but it's February 15th. I'd much rather be talking about a team that's in the thick of an NCAA tournament race. I got into this to talk basketball. That's me. I'm kind of tired, but I mean, it doesn't help that Indiana's had so many coaching searches also. I would like to actually talk about the team at some point, but that's all we got for today. Always appreciate the time, Jeff. Really enjoy it. I'm Jack Grossman. We'll be back next week here on Floyd Street's Finest.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about, but why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.